Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is the Sunday morning wake-up call. This is Sean McCord, your reliable monthly host. Rick Moore is taking a Sunday off. It is a bright, crisp November morning, and I'm sitting across
December.
From... Did I say November? Is it December already? I'm sitting here. The person correcting me is my friend Marnie Allen. Marnie, we actually met on the wake-up call, I forget how many years ago, five or so years ago.
Maybe even longer.
Maybe even longer when you were back in our older iteration. And we've been bumping into each other and been friends since. But you are here with the... actually spell it out for me so I don't.
Community Attention Foster Families.
Community Attention Foster Families. Thank you. I wanted to make sure I got that correct. What is Community Attention Foster Families? Let's not bury the lead. Let's start with that. What is a group? What do you do? How do people find out about it?
So Community Attention Foster Families is a government agency who works in partnership with social services. We work with the city of Charlottesville, Albemarle County, and Greene County, and we recruit, train, and support foster parents on behalf of those localities.
So, you're not a placement agency.
No, so we, you know, I always joke that Charlottesville is special, and we often do things differently. So, such is the case with CAFF, as it's locally referred to, CAFF. Everywhere else in the state has a social service unit that is hosts a foster care department under it. So, you know, like there's Child Protective Services, Adult Protective Services. There's a foster care piece under social services who does everything related to foster care. So they recruit and train foster parents. They work with bio parents. They work with foster care prevention, keeping kids out of foster care. It's all one unit under that. Sometimes when children come into care, social services will say the needs of children are so great that one social service person working with both the bio family as well as the foster family, the needs are just too much for one person with multiple caseloads. And so a referral would go to a private agency or what's called a therapeutic foster care agency, right? So in this community, that's Braley and Thompson, UMFS, DePaul, and People Places. Those are the four primary other places in the state. There may be some other therapeutic foster care agencies, but those are sort of the big ones. So said child comes into care. The one person who's the social worker says, well, the needs of this child is too much. And the family and the child need more support than the one person can give. So the referral would go to a therapeutic foster care agency. And then there would be a case manager that would support the foster family. So in our community, the way it works is CAFF works in partnership with those three localities, Albemarle, Charlottesville, and Greene. We recruit, train, and support foster parents. And when said child comes into care, the foster parents get a CAFF worker, and the biological family gets a social worker who works to support them. So essentially, you're getting that higher level of care with no extra cost to the state. Okay, and the only time that those localities would make a referral to the private agencies would be if we don't have a family to match the needs of the referral coming in. Okay. So, for example, we get a sibling group of five. Social services says they cannot be separated. They have to stay together. And we don't have a family that can accommodate five children. Then the referral would go to the private agency. Okay. One of the things about when that happens in our community, is because CAFF works within our region, we really want to keep kids local. Right. So it's disruptive to come into foster care, as you might imagine. It's even more disruptive when you have to leave your community. So the private agencies approve people from much farther away than we do. So, for example, we had a referral. We couldn't meet the need. The child ended up going all the way out to Orange. And so the kids had to leave their school. They had to leave their community, which makes everything a difficult situation even harder.
Sure. Just compounds the separation.
Yes. It makes family visits hard. It makes, you know, everything. Just transportation is more difficult. All of those kinds of things. So we really work hard to keep kids in our community.
So families, children are referred to you. How does that process work?
So there's a couple of ways that kids can come into foster care. It can be an emergency situation where a crisis, you know, is happening, and social services said the safety risk is so great that the kids have to come into care right then. Right.
Something happened in their family situation or wherever they are, and the agencies had to step in.
Right. Our community is really great at doing foster care prevention, trying to keep kids out of care. And so unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we work as hard as we can to support the family. But whatever they're struggling with, the struggle is just too hard for them, and kids end up coming into foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Those are sort of the two main avenues of, you know, kids coming into care.
And then how do you find parents, how do you find families to place these children with?
So things like this, going on the radio. I do a lot of outreach in the faith community. We do a lot of community events. So actually WVPT Book Fair, they didn't have that this year, but that's a great event for us. Any place that really can give us good exposure to folks. We did the Pride Festival this year, which was great.
Mm-hmm. Saw you there.
And then also, you know, my husband teases me all the time. He says, you're always working. I went to his work party the other night and recruited somebody. So part of who I am is wanting to help families.
So the main thing is recruiting.
Yeah.
But who are you looking for?
So we are looking for people who are emotionally and financially stable. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest piece. You can be a single, you can be a couple, you don't have to be married. You can be a same-sex couple. You need to be in it, to help children. Right. So you shouldn't be thinking about this as a way to be boastful to people of what a good person you are. Right. You're in it to really provide a safe, nurturing, stable environment for a child who's been through some hard times, until their parents can address whatever it is that needs to be addressed, and then they can go home again. Right. So our goal is to reunify and strengthen families.
Thank you for bringing that up so early on, because I think that's an important point here, and bears repeating. What you want to do is have the children back with their families, with their siblings, with their parent or parents.
Yes.
But sometimes life intercedes. Things happen. People just a child, and when we say child, we mean, you know, children up through teenagers.
Birth to almost 18.
Yeah. There may be circumstances in which they just have to be away from that, and they need to be in a safe, secure, stable, nurturing environment. Is there a typical amount of time that a foster child might be placed with a family?
So I can give you an average.
Yeah.
The average length of stay is about 15 and a half months. But if you hear this and you decide you'd like to go on the journey of becoming a foster parent, and you decide to take training with me, I have made a giant poster that says "It depends."
Yeah.
Because so many answers are "It depends," and it's so specific to the situation and the child and the family. We have children that come in that are in care for less than 24 hours, and then we have children that are in care for 3 years. And so the average of that is what it is, but it's sort of meaningless. What the state would like to have happen is that there should be, and this is sort of social work speak, but children should know where they're going to go permanently at a year's mark or before. So, you know, there are court reviews and things that happen. I don't want to get too technical in the conversation, but a child should know where they're going to go by a year mark. But there are legitimate reasons why sometimes that, again, social work speak timeline, why children might stay in care longer. So let me give you an example. Let's say when the children came into care, their parents were homeless, they weren't working, and they were struggling with substances. So they come into care, we're looking now, they've been in care, the parents have engaged with services, they have been clean and sober for 9 months, they're in a job training program, and they're staying at the Salvation Army shelter. Okay, so they've made leaps and bounds of progress, they've welcomed the support, they've accessed the resources, and at a year mark, the judge says, you have made tremendous progress, but you need a job and you need a home.
Right.
Right. But the judge says, I see everything that you've done so far. I see how hard you're working. So we'll give you 6 more months to get to where you need to be. Right. And we would hope in that 6 months, the job training would be complete. They would find a job. There are resources in the community to help them, you know, move into an apartment or a house, probably an apartment. You know, there really are legitimate reasons why kids end up staying in care longer than a year.
Sure.
But again, it, you know, we could probably spend 3 days talking about all of the reasons and things that might happen, right?
We don't have 3 days, but we have another 48 minutes or so. My guest is Marnie Allen of Community Action Foster Families. This is Sean McCord hosting the Sunday morning wake-up call. So let's talk about the parents. You mentioned a scenario, you know, homeless or substance abuse, things going on that might prevent that do not provide an optimum environment for the child. But there are a lot of I'm going to use your words. There are a lot of myths around these families too. Who might be in these situations. You know, when you're looking for foster families, as I said, you're looking for people who are financially and emotionally secure and stable and available. What factors can keep that from happening to a family who needs this kind of attention?
So there's two big philosophical shifts that are happening in the world of foster care.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
So one is, when you agree to be a foster parent, what we hope is that when a child joins your family and then they're able to go home, the relationship you have will continue with the child. Like, we don't want to create more loss for a child. We don't want to create more loss for the foster parent. We don't want to create more loss for the children who, you know, have been siblings.
Right.
Right.
As with any parenting situation, right, this is a lifetime commitment.
Yes, that's what we hope to happen.
Yeah.
So that's one shift. So when people come in, you know, we talk about that. And the second big shift is we ask foster parents to have a relationship with the biological parent.
Mm-hmm.
So if for no other reason, then to maintain that relationship with the child, right? Because if there's not some level of trust, they are not going to continue to allow you to see the children after they're home, because they're not going to trust that you don't have an ulterior motive or that you think you're better than they are, right? And you can think whatever you want, but you shouldn't share that necessarily, right? I mean, we all have our own thoughts that go through our head.
Our own judgments that we make.
You know, yeah. If we're all in it because we care about the kids, and we want to help them live up to their full potential, have a brighter future, know that there are options in the world, there are choices in the world, expose them to opportunities their birth families might not be able to because of finances or whatever, right? Your goal is to enrich this young life. If you are genuine and authentic in that, those bio parents will see it. The biological parents will understand that you're in this because you care about the children just as they do. And you guys can, I'm not asking or suggesting that you become a mentor or a best friend, but build a relationship where it's all centered around the child, where everyone's best interest is about helping and supporting that child. And it's pretty miraculous what we've seen in terms of relationships being built.
Let's paint that picture a little bit more. If someone's listening to this show and say they're a young professional couple, maybe they have young children, or maybe they don't have children yet, or they're empty nesters, but they look around and say, well, we have room actually in our house and in our hearts for this. What is a foster family expected to provide?
So the first step would be to come to an information session with me.
And we should probably say this right up front. How do we find out more about Community Action Foster Families?
Community Attention Families.
Excuse me.
That's okay. It's long.
Glasses on and read my own writing. Community Attention Foster. CAF. How do people find out about CAF?
So you can call me, 970-3735. I'm allowed to plug us.
You already have.
Or, of course, you can go to the website, charlottesville.org/CAFF.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you guys will post something.
If you're listening to the podcast, we'll include links on the podcast page.
Yeah. And, of course, you can always just call Charlottesville or Albemarle Department of Social Services if you forget our name, and they can link you back to us.
Right.
But the first thing would be to come to an information session. Then the next step would be to have a home visit. This is not a white glove inspection. If I could transform any of you to my home, you would immediately feel better. This is just to verify that your house meets basic health and safety standards, and that you to verify that you actually have room.
Mm.
We have had situations, unfortunately, many years ago, but that this is why this is our protocol.
Sure.
So I go on the home visit. It's also a chance for me to check in with the family one-on-one. You usually will have more questions that you maybe didn't want to ask in a group setting. If you still want to continue with the process, you would sign up for a foster parent class. The class is 27 hours. During the calendar school year, we meet three different times. So it would be 3 hours once a week in the evening. The next one starts January 17th. It'll be a Tuesday night, so from 6 to 9 for 9 weeks. We do have an expedited class in July. That meets twice a week during the day. So for empty nesters, school teachers, people who sort of have calendar school year jobs not jobs. Some people really like the idea of meeting during the day. We offer that once a year. And then they're coinciding with the class. There's also a home study that's written, which is really sort of the history of your life. We want to get to know you really well, because we want kids to be with their foster family until wherever they're going permanently happens, right?
Right.
So when kids get moved around, every time they have to leave a family, their chance of achieving permanency, of getting to wherever they're going forever, reduces by 25%.
Wow.
So we talk a lot about that in training. We talk a lot about hanging in there with kids and why it's so important, why kids might why you might feel like they're provoking you, right? That's not the intention at all. But kids who have been through trauma have a lot of things on their mind, and they want to make sure that you're real and you're genuine and you're going to hang in there.
My guest, who's being real and genuine, is Marnie Allen of Community Attention Foster Families. This is Sean McCord for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. This is Sean McCord on the Wake Up Call with my guest, Marnie Allen. If you're listening to this live, you just heard a little public service piece about war toys. sponsored by my friends at the Charlottesville Center for Peace and Justice. On that topic, when you're looking for families, Marnie, as you're inspecting, you said you see that they have room and other other things to add to a child. What about the presence of guns?
So you can have guns in your home, but you have to be willing to lock your weapons, and that includes bows and arrows, BB guns, any weapon mm-hmm. at all. Your weapon and ammunition have to be locked separately.
And have you had situations where you've had to turn down families because they weren't willing to follow those rules?
Yes. So that's one of the reasons we... You know, so another example is once upon a time we went to a home where they had an 80-foot raised deck that had had a hot tub that no longer had a hot tub, but there was a hole.
A hole, yeah.
If they either didn't have the resources or for whatever reason were unwilling to fix that hole, there's no point in moving forward because it's a safety concern that we wouldn't be able to have a child be in that home because it was too much of a safety issue. Ponds, pools, there are certain regulations around those, you know, having gates up so that kids don't fall and drown, certain things like that. So if there are concerns, and like I said, they're either... The family's either unwilling or financially they're not able to address the safety issues, then there's no point in going forward. So,
And Charlottesville and our area is a combination of suburban and rural.
Mm-hmm.
So are you, you know, in addition to finding homes in the city, are you also finding homes out in the country, people run farms, people, there are animals present?
Absolutely, yeah. And so if you have cats and dogs, you have to provide, you know, documentation that they've gotten their shots and all that sort of stuff. I don't, snakes, you don't need anything for. Birds, you don't need any documentation for. Chickens, goats, cows, llamas, those kinds of things are all fine.
Those are all fine.
Yeah.
That's good to know. So if my listener has a llama farm, if you hadn't thought about this before, you should get in touch with Marnie Allen at Community Attention Foster Families.
Yes, and having animals also, you know, is a wonderful, you know, we are by nature relational beings,
mm-hmm.
right? So we, as part of being relational beings, we need to have a sense of purpose and a sense of belonging in the world, right? And so this is, if you end up taking this journey with me in training, you'll hear me talk about having grace for the biological parents, right? So we all know people who struggle with domestic violence, with drugs, with alcohol, with mental health issues. And some of the difference between the kids that come into care and families who have those struggles, kids that don't come into care, is access to resources.
Right.
Right? I'll get back to how this relates to animals, I promise.
It's okay.
You may have to remind me, though. you know, when I say access to resources, one of the biggest resources is relationships, people, mm-hmm. right? If you don't have healthy, stable people in your life and you're struggling, your struggles turn into crisis really quickly.
Sure.
Right? And so that's what I talk about when I talk about having grace. Also, many of the families whose children come into care have experienced generational poverty, generational mental illness, generational substance abuse, maybe not addiction, but abuse. And if you are coming from a family who hasn't historically parented well, you don't know how to parent well. And it's not because you don't love your children. It's never a question of love. It's a question of capacity and ability, right? And this is maybe where we, you know, really push... everyone deserves a chance to learn what they don't know. Okay? I mean, we really, truly believe that. And that's why we ask foster parents to and bio parents to work together. We're not asking you to be their, again, not their therapist or anything else, but you can mentor them in a very genuine, non-judgmental way. So inviting them to go to doctor's appointments with you, you know, help modeling what it's like to interact with teachers at a parent-teacher conference. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of things, supporting them and helping them learn how to do things in a healthy way without being judgmental. They've been judged. They're being judged.
Right.
You don't need to do that. When you're in a place with animals, right?
You did it. You brought it back around.
I did. Because that sense of purpose, that sense of belonging, when children, this is why, like, you know, therapeutic horse riding, you know, those kinds of, this is why, like, the dogs in jail programs that you've heard about, it gives people a sense of purpose. I have something to take care of. I have a reason to be here, and I'm doing something important. We all need to feel that. And many of our bio parents have been so just feeling beaten down by their circumstances, by their struggles. They've lost that sense, right? And very often, the only thing that they're working for is their kids. Even if you don't think so by the choices they're making, it's the one thing that they've got.
Sure.
Right? And now, when they're taken away, what do they have to work for? It can be a very defeating process and traumatic process for those parents. Right? And so, we talk a lot about that in training, and we talk about trying not to pass judgment against them and just being a support for their kids. And again, if that is you, if you're genuine with that, you can build a relationship with them.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you talk about people who are struggling with poverty or people who are struggling with, you know, substance abuse or generational problems. But unless that support is already there for you, anything can happen to yank the rug out from underneath you. You can have a medical event.
Mm-hmm.
You could be doing okay. You know, you could be like the first person, you know, you're trying to break that cycle and you know, you're working and you may not be making a lot of money, but you're supporting your children, and then something can come along, any small thing. And unless you have those resources, unless you have, you know, family and community and whatever to back you up,
mm-hmm.
It can just take one thing and everything can just be scattered. And I'm not going to say it could happen to anybody, but it could happen to many, many people.
Sure.
So if someone's listening now and thinking, I'm trying to sort of put myself in the mindset of someone who, for whom this is a new idea. They're listening to the show and they're thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, they're talking about me. I've got space in my house. I've got space in my heart. But what objections people might have, what it takes to sort of make that last step to see themselves in that place. I mean, you've talked about sort of the emotional commitment, talked about the commitment of resources. What about financial commitments? Are people who are asked to foster, what kind of financial commitments?
So you do, making? I mean, you don't do this in plans of getting rich.
No.
Because that's one of the myths. People do foster care to make money, right?
I've heard that. It strikes me as a really poor way to achieve that.
But you do get financial support. Your food bill, your electric bill, your heating bill, all of those things will increase. So you will get financial. You get a stipend. The stipend is, you have to report it to taxes, but it's tax-free. So it's not taxable income.
Right.
I would say one of the big things you need to consider is your commitment of time.
Yes.
Because there will be family visits, there will be meetings. I often joke that you're not only inviting a child into your home, you're inviting the government into your home. Because
that always works out.
Well, we're all very nice people, but there are, you know, monthly home visits that we're required to do by the state. And there's usually therapy of some kind, even for little ones. There often is physical therapy or occupational therapy or speech therapy. Or, you know, when you experience trauma, many of your normal developing pathways, for lack of a better word, get mm-hmm. sort of thwarted. Mm-hmm. So you will need support to sort of get caught back up. So even with little ones, you know, all of those things hold true. So it's also a big commitment of time. I'd say, you know, a worthwhile commitment, but it is something that you need to consider. We have had some empty nesters who are very civically engaged, some of the biggest hearted people I know. And then we really sat down and talked about how it would impact their schedule. They were not willing to give up some of those activities.
Sure.
And it wasn't for lack of wanting to or willingness to want to help kids, but in reality, it just wasn't going to fit their schedule. So something to think about.
So do you have a backlog now? Do you have kids that you're trying to place with families, or do you have families that are, or just the other way around? Do you have more people lined up than you actually have needs right now? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Unfortunately, that's not the case. And again, you know, in our community, when community attention foster families or CAF is not able to place, that's when they go to the private agencies, and that's often when children leave our community.
Mm.
So it's not as though kids are hanging out at social services for a week waiting for us to find a family. Social services has to find a place for children to go. And it's just, if we as an agency aren't able to find a family, then it'll go to the private agencies or residential facilities. So particularly for older kids, group homes. And it's unfortunate. Kids need families. Kids deserve families. It's very unfortunate when they end up getting placed in congregate care.
So what is your greatest need right now?
Our greatest need is for families willing to take teens. And here's what I want people to think about. You just heard me say a few minutes ago that when kids experience trauma, I mean, you think about any trauma, not just trauma, abuse, neglect, those kinds of things, but any kind of trauma, you emotionally stop growing until you can heal from your trauma. So most of our teens are little people who come in big packages, right? And the beauty about having a teen join a family who has younger people is that in a very organic way, that little person in a big body gets to experience all the things that the little people get to experience that they didn't get when they were younger. So there's a very powerful, we always have a co-trainer who train with me who's an active foster parent or who has fostered before. So I can say whatever I say that I'm required to say to help you get prepared. And then my co-trainer will say, and this is what it was like in my house, right? Mm-hmm. So you get sort of an idea of reality, right? One of my co-trainers ended up adopting two girls from different families, each pretty significantly abused. Unfortunately, their families weren't able to do what they needed to do. And so it went to adoption, which does happen, but not as often as you might think. 65% of our children are able to go home. Another 25% go to something called relative placement. And then the remaining percentage for adoption. Side note, getting back to what I was saying. So when one of her children was about 13 years old, they decided to have a baby day. So they went to the store together. They picked out baby food. They picked out sippy cups. She went totally nonverbal, sat in her lap all day. She said this was one of the most terrifying things to think about and strange things to think about. But she said the bonding and the attachment that happened during that day changed the trajectory of their relationship going forward. So it's really never too late to go and feed that little person inside and give them what they didn't get when they were younger. And it's so much easier for that to happen when there are actual little people around.
Still, that must be kind of a scary thought to some people. I mean, if you have a family, if you have young children, the idea of bringing not only a teenager into your home, but a teenager who's been traumatized. I mean, when a 6-year-old throws a temper tantrum, you know, it's terrible, but you can deal with it. But with a 16-year-old, throws a temper tantrum, it can get violent. Are these more mids that you're having to address?
Yes, I think so. I mean, all teenagers are difficult.
I will second that notion.
So I think giving people who haven't had a lot of experience with teens, just sort of helping them understand kind of the baseline, what a teen is, is helpful. And it's really helpful. We have had families who decided to go that route. And so part of our training, our last session that we meet is a panel of current foster parents. And I always have one of our families who went into this thinking little, because they had little ones, ended up taking teens, and they only want teens now.
Really?
So there's a lot of positives about having teens. You have a lot more flexibility in terms of routine. You can use a lot more humor. I'm somebody who believes that a sense of humor is really helpful. It's very different dynamics. And it can really be a wonderful thing.
Here's an awkward question, but when placing children with families, do you consider race and cultural background?
Yes. So if you get to decide what we call your profile, and there are some legitimate reasons why, and I'll give you two sort of quick examples. So one example, we had a family who had two biological, they were a white couple, two biological children, two adopted children that were white, one adopted child who was African American. And around the time that this young man turned 8, he was looking at his family saying, I need some more color.
Yeah.
Right. And so the family, they had moved here from Kentucky, and just, they wanted to continue fostering and, you know, open to adoption if it presented itself. They said, we only want children of color.
Mm.
We had a family who, the father of the couple lived with them, and he was extremely racist. And they said, You know, we are fine with color, but he lives in our home and he is not. And obviously it needs to be a welcoming environment. Same goes for kids who are struggling with sexual or gender orientation. If you're not comfortable with that, we're not putting a child who's struggling with those issues in your home, because you're not going to be able to talk to them and make them feel comfortable. You get to decide your age range. If you have a gender preference, there's some people, some families who maybe only have girls in their household. So they think probably a teen boy, maybe not such a good fit, maybe a little boy, but we'll take teen girls. Or there's all kinds of reasons. There's also something called the willingness to foster scale. It's not exhaustive, but it's extensive about behaviors. And you sort of get to rate like what you're comfortable with, what you're comfortable with support, and what's a non-negotiable. So most people don't say, oh, I'd love a fire starter. Please sign me up for a fire starter. Most people, a big non-negotiable is a history of harming animals, because so many people doing this do have animals. This is sort of their caring nature, right?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't, many people also, non-negotiable is gang affiliation. It's just something they're not that familiar with and are not comfortable with. So you get to set your parameters. We call it in social work speak your profile, but that's part of the process. And that's also when we do our home study, that history of your life, we get to know you really well so that we can make as good a match as possible, right? We're not, we don't have a crystal ball. We can't see everything, but we try to make a good match.
We'll pick up that thread again in just a moment. This is my guest is Marnie Allen of Community Attention Foster Families. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. So I want to pick up just one thread we were talking about before, going on to other projects. Talked about families being comfortable with an issue. Let's say gender identity, as you brought that up. But how do you interview? I mean, you can talk to a family and say, oh yeah, we're completely comfortable with that issue. But if they don't have experience,
that's fine. You don't have to have experience, but you can't be on. So some people who in particularly are called through their faith.
Yes.
Struggle with that more than others.
Sure.
And they, our experience has been if they are not comfortable with it, they will tell you.
Mm.
And I think it's really good for kids to see that you don't have all the answers. We'll figure it out together. And it's good for kids. You know, people say, well, oh my God, I want to do it so well. It's good to be imperfect because we are not perfect beings. You are not going to have every right answer for every situation, but your willingness to hang in there and figure it out is a really good lesson for kids to learn. Right. And so with that issue, you don't have to have experience with it, but you can't be afraid to explore it, right? If you are telling somebody that because they're gay, they're going to hell, that's not a very comforting place to be when it's an issue that you're struggling with, right?
Right.
You can say, I don't really know. Let's figure out what the resources are. Let's go talk to some people. I think there's probably, a group of kids who meet who talk about this. Let's find it together. That's great. But you can't, if you're condemning someone who's already struggling and already been through trauma, it's not a very welcoming environment. And so that's what we want for our kids, right?
And that right there, I think that answer, I don't know, but let's figure this out together. That's the sign not just of someone who could be a good foster parent, but of someone who's been a parent. Because that is something that that I had to learn as a parent of young children and then teenagers and now young adults.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of shock them and say, I don't have all the answers. We don't have all the answers, but let's figure it out together. And that's really what building a family is all about.
Well, and building a genuine relationship. Right?
Yeah.
Right? That's how you let people know that you care about them and that you're there. All right. We'll do it together.
So, if you don't mind, let's talk a little bit about you.
Sure.
Because as long as I've known you, you've always been involved in issues of reaching out to people whose situations are not optimal. You worked with the homeless, you worked with the Salvation Army. Now you're working with community detention foster families. What drew you, Marley Allen, to this kind of work?
So specific to foster care, it was actually working in the homeless system of care.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked at Salvation Army. I also worked at the Monticello Area Community Action Agency with Hope House.
Mm-hmm.
They primarily worked, MACA only worked with families. When I was at Salvation Army, we worked with singles, couples, as well as families. And I've always sort of been drawn more to families because I want moms and dads to figure out how to delight in their children and not just feel like life is a struggle and a burden, right? And then when you can help parents figure out that they have choices, that somebody believes in them, you change the whole, you shift everything, right? So you impact those parents, but then you impact the kids who then are parented in a different way, in a healthier way. And so they learn that, and then that's what they start to pass on, right? So you're trying to break that unhealthy cycle. And so my course of working with homeless families and listening to their stories, there is about an 80% correlation rate between homeless heads of household that had also been in foster care at some point.
Mm.
Okay. This is very unscientific. This is just me kind of doing a tally, listening to local family stories. So I've been on the board for the Thomas Jefferson Area Coalition for the Homeless for a number of years, always advocating for families. Family homelessness looks very different than a single or a couple
Sure.
being homeless. So watching how a family can struggle, many of the families that I worked with, their kids were a heartbeat away from coming into foster care, and sort of seeing their struggles, also seeing how much they love their kids and holding those two truths together, was incredibly powerful for me. But working in the world of homelessness and then coming to this realization that so many of these parents had also at some point been in foster care, sort of instead of, if you will, triaging, I want to get to the root, right? So if we did a better job in foster care, we did a better job of helping people build relationships and creating a support network, we'd see a lot less homeless families. And I was just sort of lucky enough that the stars aligned and CAF had a position open when I came to this realization and ended up getting hired. It just all fell into place. But that's really my goal. And I, because I've seen that struggle, I think I can help people understand, again, what we were talking about of like not judging these parents, right? I've seen it. I've been there, and I understand how you can struggle that much and really make bad choices, really bad choices, and still love your kids and have an opportunity to do things differently. And I believe it. In my core of who I am, I believe it. I believe that people deserve chances. Unfortunately, the reality is not everyone takes the opportunity provided to them. It's hard when that happens, and it's hard to see that. But we've all seen it. We all know one, two, someone in our family, a friend, a family friend who has struggled with addiction or struggled with mental health, who have been provided multiple opportunities, and the struggle's too hard for them. I mean, we're seeing it all over with, you know, with the opioid addiction.
Yeah.
Right? I know that's a whole nother ball game.
We could do another hour on that.
Yeah. But, you know, I think people are maybe willing to have that shift a little bit more now that, you know, part of what we are as an organization trying to do, what so many organizations are trying to do is, like, you know, debunk these myths. Right. There's all kinds of myths around mental health and addiction. And, you know, there's all kinds of myths around foster care. You know, the system doesn't want to take kids away. Sometimes we have to for their safety. And when that happens, what we want to do is support families in getting the help that they need so that kids can go home. Kids love their parents no matter what they do, no matter how bad the circumstances are. They don't want their parents to go away. They want the bad stuff to stop. And so if we're really in it to help kids, then we have to help their parents because kids want and need their parents and they deserve them. You know, those are their parents. And even if they can't go home, right, there's, you know, that percentage that they're not able to return home. They still deserve a relationship with the biological family. And that's what we're also doing a better job of, is helping kids stay connected. And, you know, the reality is the more people that love you, the better you do in life, right? And that's what we're trying to do.
Boy, that should just be everybody's mantra. So when you've been, let's talk about you just a little bit more of a minute, but
sure,
I think that, no. You've been doing this kind of work, well, for as long as I've known you. It's been
over 20 years.
Yeah, kind of your life's passion. So, but in that time, in the past few years, you're married now. You have a child of your own.
I do.
Has becoming a parent expanded or shifted your perspective on this kind of work at all?
Every day I'm grateful that my child is able to remind me that there's hope and goodness in the world.
Mm.
I'm also reminded that that's not true for everybody. That sometimes people feel a victim of their circumstances and they don't feel like they have choices in the world. And I welcome the opportunity to, you know, help my daughter understand that everybody deserves love, right? So my parenting is very different. You know, when we see somebody on the street, you know, my message is, you know, not stranger danger. It's don't talk to them if you're not with an adult, but everybody deserves to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
I think if I didn't have my daughter, it actually would be a lot harder. to be reminded of what good there can be. And I think, you know, I've had my own personal struggles. And I do believe that, really the bottom line of things is relationships. And so if I can help people understand that, and sometimes it sounds a little trite and I don't mean it to, but it's really true. I've seen it. You just need one person to believe in you and your whole life can change. I didn't really answer your question. I scooted around.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Person changing lives is Marnie Allen of Community Detention Foster Families. I love this about a guest. You came in and you handed me a note. Here are things I want to talk about. And as we're approaching the last few minutes of the show, tell me about the Bluebird Project, because you wrote it down here. I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's so exciting. So May is Foster Care Awareness Month, and historically in our community, the event that we did was tying blue ribbons on the trees by the Freedom Wall downtown. And the only people who showed up and that were touched were people who are already sort of involved and aware of the issue, right? And the whole point is to raise awareness. So last year I had this idea of artists creating bluebirds and having a flock of bluebirds that represented the number of children in care, and having an art exhibit as part of First Fridays in May. It's well ingrained in my mind. First Fridays May last year was a torrential downpour, and so we ended up doing our exhibit the next First Fridays, which was also a torrential downpour.
Oh no!
So our bluebirds got rained on, but it's an incredible way to engage the artistic community, raise awareness, and really help our community understand some of the complexities and just about kids in care and our community and how our community intersects with foster care. So this year, there's a coalition, the Foster Care Adoption Awareness Coalition, of which CAF is part of, and CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocate. If you want to support kids in care but you don't think you can open your home to a placement, like a long-term child, a child joining your family, consider CASA. It's a really important work. But anyway, so the coalition and CASA are working together, and we are asking artists to create a bluebird. It has to be able to fit on a stake or a stick, because this idea is creating a flock.
Preferably waterproof.
Yeah, preferably. Well, no, we're indoor this year. We're actually going to be First Fridays at the Haven, in the sanctuary at the Haven. So we'll be indoors. But the idea is that every child in our community who's in foster care will be represented by a unique bluebird of some kind. And then at the end of May, we're actually going to be auctioning these pieces off. And so we've got some pretty talented artists. In fact, one artist who is world renowned, who lives in Berkeley, she signed up.
Nice.
Her name's Pamela Blotner. But anyway, so we need artists to create bluebirds for this project.
And when you say artists, I mean just people who are willing to create art.
Yeah.
So families, if you've been moved by this idea and you have artistic children want to create bluebirds and then come to the event in May, do you have the date?
It's the first Friday in May.
Okay. First Friday in May at the Haven.
I believe it's May 5th.
And they can go on to charlottesville.org/CAF.
CAFF. Or they can also go to CASA's website.
Right. So you and I had a delightful tea outdoors on a cold day a few months ago. Because you're looking for ways to expand your message through art. And now you'd like to try to do something through theater. So give the pitch to my audience that you gave me.
Yeah, so I thought it would be wonderful to have actual children, maybe children in care, maybe children who have been siblings to kids in care or been, exposed to foster care in some way, friends or family or what have you, actually write a play about foster care from a child's perspective as a way to engage our community. And so that's the idea. I need help in making it a reality. All I have really is this idea in my head. But if you're interested in working on that project, give me a call.
So, call. Give us your number again.
970-3735.
So I know that we have lots of theater professionals and amateurs in the listening audience. I'm one of them. If you are driven to try to give your talents to a cause like this, get in touch with my guest, Marnie Allen. This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Marnie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's always such a pleasure to talk to you, and you're doing such great and important work for families and for our community. To find out more about Community Attention Foster Families, go to charlottesville.org, CAFF. We got about 30 seconds. Do you have a last message you want to give to people?
I just welcome any opportunity to get the message out. So if you have a book club or a church or your own radio station or, some other way that you think it would be helpful for me to talk to folks who might be interested in considering this, give me a call. And the other thing is, there are more ways to support our families than just signing up to be a foster parent.
Right.
So I really encourage you to join the conversation, find out more about how you can support strengthening families and keeping our kids local.
Thank you so much, Marnie. You've been listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.